Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. As we head further into February, many of you may be finding it tougher to keep New Year's resolutions, like losing weight or eating healthier foods.
It's difficult to change old habits, especially when it comes to eating, and the culture and influences all around us can make it even harder.
Maybe on the way to the gym, you pass a convenience store with chips and candy right out front.
Or when you go out for a nice meal, you find yourself filling up on all that delicious bread.
Or you go food shopping for milk and veggies, but end up tossing and a pint of ice cream and a box of cookies.
It's challenging to stay on course and lose weight when surrounded by so much temptation.
So a new book called A Big Fat Crisis, The Hidden Forces Behind the Obesity Epidemic and How We Can End It, makes the argument that in order for us to be healthier, we need to condition ourselves psychologically to look at the current food environment with suspicion and distrust. Joining us now to talk about this is Carrie Goldberg, the co-host of WBUR's Common Health Blog. Hi, Carrie.
Hey, Sasha.
And also with us is the book's author, Dr. Deborah Cohen. She's also a senior scientist at the RAND Corporation. Hi, Deborah.
Hi.
And Carrie, a question for you first, because in your blog post about this book, you made this very honest observation that you've always been baffled by why so many people, including you, can accomplish so many notable things, but still struggle to lose unwanted weight. So why did this book and its approach stand out to you?
This book stood out because it made this very powerful argument that given what human nature is and given what the food environment is that we're now living in, it may not be realistic for most of us to be able to have the superhuman self-control that would be required to lose weight in this environment. So it made me feel a little better about my own failings.
It's basically saying we can't blame ourselves because everything around us inundates us with bad foods and encourages us to eat these bad foods. It even goes so far as to say, therefore, the government needs to step in and do something about it.
That's right. Really, the central argument of the book is, given this food environment and what is really a public health crisis that it has created, in which, you know, a third of the country is obese and another third is overweight, that we must have government intervention the same way that we had government public health information, for example, in the 19th century when cholera was being spread by bad sewage going all around, and so we needed better plumbing.
But Deborah Cohen, you do say that people can still have basically some kind of arsenal of ways to try to overcome temptation. And you talk about this idea of looking at food with distrust. So explain how a person could go on this distrust diet, let's call it.
When it comes to food, we use this non-cognitive automatics, almost unconscious processing. And so if we are more suspicious, it automatically makes us have this cognitive and thoughtful processing. So if we're, you know, looking at food and, you know, we see a rack of candy bars and gum at the checkout, if we start looking at that suspiciously, it's going to help us make a choice that would avoid choosing it rather than automatically putting it in our wagons.
Well, explain a little more for people who might want to try to adopt this. What are you supposed to feel suspicious about when you look at the gum?
First of all, you can look at the placement. If they put something near the cash register or an end aisle display or in a special display, it's designed to capture our attention. We're going to be more likely to automatically choose it.
So, Deborah, give us some more examples. So let's say you walk in a restaurant, the bread basket comes. By the time the meal arrives, you're full of bread and butter and olive oil. What should you do when the bread basket comes?
Well, probably it'd be wise to tell the waiter just to not give you the bread and not to have it on the table before the meal.
What if the people you're eating with really want the bread and you're faced to stare at it throughout the meal?
Well, you're going to end up depleting your mental capacity just looking at it and trying to resist it. So it's really a difficult challenge to have to say no to food, because we're all automatically attracted to food, and if it's there, our tendency is to grab it and eat it.
Deborah, one other thing you note is that, for example, if a store has a 10 for $10 display, you might think that's a great deal, but you say what you should really think is, you're trying to get me to eat more than I need to. So is that another kind of strategy?
Yeah, I mean, I think people have to be aware of sales, especially when they anchor a quantity to a certain price, like 2 for $5 or 10 for 10 or buy 3, get 1 free. You might think you're getting a deal and a better price, but if you end up buying more than you would have and then eating more than you should, that's really not in your favor.
Carrie, is this persuasive? Do you think you could actually change your thinking and have sort of kick in that distrust instinct every time you see a food you're tempted by that you really think you shouldn't eat?
Well, I do think that the more you know about it, the more that may actually become somewhat automatic. Although Dr. Cohen also points out that this is not really actually a desirable state of affairs, that we need to be, you know, relating to our food with negative emotions, with distrust and with suspicion. But that seems to be what the current food environment is, in fact, forcing on many of us.
I think it's really unreasonable to have to ask each individual person to fight the food environment on their own. It's too much, it's overwhelming, and this is the information age. People are already bombarded with so much, and they have so much on their plates that this one extra thing is just overwhelming.
Deborah Cohen, do you hear from people who scoff at the idea that we can't expect people to have self-control? Are there people who aren't very sympathetic to that viewpoint?
Yeah, there's a lot of people who feel that this is an individual problem and it's all up to each person to change their habits and to not put food in their mouths. But what they don't recognize is that most people do have trouble controlling themselves. I mean, if it were easy, we wouldn't have an obesity epidemic. You know, many people struggle very much. They're on diets all the time and they're not able to succeed. And if we continue to think of this as only their problem, they're just going to continue to have a weight issue. We need some regulations that help people make better choices. And this idea of suspicion, and it could be just having warning labels on food, not displaying these impulse items and junk food at cash registers and on end aisle displays, all of that are going to help people who really do want to control themselves and are trying the best they can.
Carrie, you're nodding.
Yes, yes. And Sasha, I would say we have models for the kinds of regulations that we could have, for example, how we treat alcohol or how we treat cigarette sales.
Yeah, I mean, just imagine if we sold alcohol the way we sell junk food in extra large quantities, from vending machines, at cash registers, in drive-through windows, in buffets for all you can drink for one price, wouldn't there be a lot more people who were drunk all the time? I mean, that's what people are facing. The food is there, and food we're naturally attracted to is in our faces, and it undermines us. It's really constitute an unsafe environment. Another analogy is just think about if all of our roads had potholes and ditches, no amount of driver education would prevent the accidents that would occur. So let's, you know, have safer roads, fill in the potholes, you know, have barriers so people don't go into ditches. That's the kind of thing we need to help people prevent obesity.
Dr. Deborah Cohen is a senior scientist at the RAND Corporation, and her new book is A Big Fat Crisis, The Hidden Forces Behind the Obesity Epidemic and How We Can End It. And Carrie Goldberg is co-host of WBUR's Common Health blog. You can find a link to her post about Dr. Cohen's book on our website, radioboston.org. Carrie and Deborah, thanks very much.
Welcome.
Thank you.
And that's it for today. This program, be sure to join us tomorrow when we'll welcome Los Rumberos to Boston. They're a local Latin fusion band. They'll be playing live in our studio with lots of energy. Should be a lot of fun.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station.
Our show is produced by Amory Sievertson, Dina Rosendorf, Alex Kingsbury, Emma Jean Weinstein, and Kathleen McNerney. We have help from Jamie Bologna.
And Tim Skog is our technical director. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.